You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Jeff Charlotte writes in the May issue of Harper's Magazine that there's a subtle battle taking place within the U.S. military between the majority of personnel who, I'm quoting, regardless of their faith or lack thereof, simply want to get their jobs done, and a small but powerful movement of Christian soldiers concentrated in the officer corps. Mr. Charlotte, who is a contributing editor at Harper's, calls his article Jesus Killed Muhammad, The Crusade for a Christian Military. He's also the author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, which is being released in a paperback edition this month by Harper's. And this July, Beacon Press will publish a book he's edited called Believer Beware, First Person Dispatches from the Margins of Faith. I'm pleased to welcome Jeff Charlotte back to the show. Hello.
Hi, Leonard.
You argue in the article that the evangelical transformation of the U.S. military really began during the Cold War. How secular was the military before the Cold War?
Well, the interesting thing about the military, and a lot of civilians imagine it as this sort of very conservative, reactionary place. You know, they saw Dr. Strangelove, and they think that's what it's really like. But, of course, in truth, it was for a long time an engine of integration, assimilation for different ethnic groups, for black and white soldiers.
I mean, like all the old war movies.
Exactly. The old war movie, you know, and a bomber, and there's a Jewish soldier and a black soldier and maybe a Native American soldier, and we're all in it together. And something happened in the sort of post-Vietnam period. Beginning with the chaplain corps, liberal Christians stopped wanting to be chaplains. And at the same time, Reagan changed the regulations. It used to be a chaplain, you had to have a pretty serious education in all the different religious faiths. Well, now you could go to a Bible college that taught you only that there's only one true faith, it's Christianity, and suddenly you could be a chaplain, an officer in charge of the spiritual lives of thousands of troops.
But wasn't the Officers' Christian Fellowship founded during World War II? Was it a different kind of organization than it is today?
It was, in much the way that American evangelicalism was a sort of a different kind of faith at that time. Officers' Christian Fellowship is maybe the sort of the most organized part of what I call this fundamentalist front that's currently within the military. For decades, this is a peaceful group, Christian officers who want to get together and share their faith, and that's great. Then they change, and now the mission statement is that they are fighting Satan within the military and reclaiming territory for Christ.
And Anne C. Loveland says that that started during the Vietnam War. Why then?
Well, partly you had the clergymen who were opposed to the Vietnam War. Traditionally, you'd had a lot of mainline Protestant chaplains, and they didn't want to be in the military anymore. They didn't want to be chaplains. And so you had this great influx of fundamentalist chaplains. Today, the chaplains that I interviewed estimated about 80% of the 2,900 active duty chaplains who are officers are fundamentalist or very conservative evangelical.
Well, you're talking about an officer group, but would you say that the military is more religious than the general population?
The interesting thing is that it's not, actually. It's a little bit representative. Now, the military, this fundamentalist front within the military claims that it is. They say the military is the last safe place in America to be a Christian. That's actually a quote. But when I got the statistics for the religious makeup of the military, in fact, there's a slightly higher percentage than average in the United States of people who report no religion, which isn't surprising when you have a lot of 18, 19-year-old kids who are, you know, thinking about where they want to be in life. Yet the chaplain corps and the officer corps, that's dramatically more conservative evangelical.
Because they're older. I'm wondering about other groups. There are Jewish soldiers, there's Muslim soldiers. I assume that every other faith is represented in the military.
Jews and Muslims are underrepresented dramatically. I mean, yes, there are Jewish soldiers in the military, and there's high-ranking, you know, Jewish soldiers in the military, but not very many. And there's a widespread problem of anti-Semitism, such that when I went to the Air Force Academy last year, I got off the plane, went straight to the academy, met with a retired colonel who was their PR person, the best foot forward, and he wanted to explain that there's no religion problem anymore. They've got a lot of diversity. He says, we even have some Jews at the academy, or at least they claim to be Jews. He thought they were pretending to be Jewish to get out of extra duties.
There's Mikey Weinstein, the president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. He was an officer, wasn't he, who got in trouble?
Well, he was a 1977 honor graduate of the Academy. And when he was back at the Academy, he encountered a lot of anti-Semitism, two severe beatings, and then put it aside, worked in the Reagan White House. You know, he's not your typical sort of liberal church-state activist. He was a conservative. But his two sons went to the Academy and encountered the same kind of anti-Semitism. So he started this organization called the Military Religious Freedom Foundation.
So is his concern anti-Semitism or what you say, that he's taken on the role of constitutional conscience of the military?
Yeah, he really sort of emerges as the hero of the story, I think precisely because he began with this concern about anti-Semitism in his own two sons. But as he looked broader and he began reaching out to soldiers who had problems, his organization now represents about 14,000 troops. 99% of them are Christians who are being discriminated against by other Christians.
And he's been critical of General Petraeus, a man who everybody else seems to think is the answer to all of our military problems.
Well, General Petraeus endorsed a book called Under Orders, which was by Lieutenant Colonel William McCoy. And it was a guidebook for officers on instilling religious values in their troops. And Petraeus said that every soldier should have this in his rucksack and put it on an endorsement on the book. Real clear violation of separation of church and state. When it got discovered, Petraeus said, oh, no, the public wasn't supposed to know about that. So he didn't defend it and say, you're right, that's wrong. He said, that's supposed to be a secret. And so Weinstein, I think rightly, said, we've got to address this.
And Weinstein has had battles with William Boykin, hasn't he?
Yeah, General William goes by Jerry Boykin. Listeners may remember a few years ago, early into wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, he went around bragging about how he had fought Allah in Somalia and won, and that his God was bigger than the Muslim God and so on. For this kind of wisdom, he was actually promoted. Bush promoted him to head of intelligence in Iraq. He oversaw the interrogation torture policy. And has since gone on the lecture circuit to denounce Weinstein as part of the demonic secular conspiracy to stop the Christian military from being Christian.
My guest is Jeff Charlotte, whose article, Jesus Killed Muhammad, The Crusade for a Christian Military, is in the current issue of Harper's Magazine. Let's talk about that title. You begin with the story of an incident in Iraq. And how does Jesus Killed Muhammad come into it?
This was a Staff Sergeant Jeffrey Humphrey got in touch with the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and they passed them to me. And he told me a story, which I was able to verify with speaking with other troops, who were at a battle on Easter, an Easter Day battle in Samarra, and they were guarding a Special Forces compound. They came under attack, and the Special Forces had an Iraqi translator with them. And so they commissioned him, apparently, to paint in giant red letters on the side of a Bradley fighting vehicle, which is essentially like a fast-moving tank, the words in Arabic, Jesus killed Muhammad.
This is meant to inflame a lot of people, isn't it?
Exactly. They then put the translator on the roof with the Special Forces guys with the big guns and a bullhorn, and the translator, who was an Iraqi Christian who had moved to America, begin shouting with his bullhorn, Jesus killed Muhammad. And then they send the Bradley fighting vehicle out into the streets of Samarra, and every single doorway opened up on it. And, you know, some of the guys say, aha, this is proof that every single Iraqi is the enemy. There are no good Iraqis. Clearly, they're all firing us. Well, it's a little bit like, you know, if the Los Angeles Police Department was to drive a cruiser through South Central with a noose hanging out the window and then would act shocked when people got angry. And I spoke to the
That Muhammad killed Jesus.
Muhammad killed Jesus would not go over well in a lot of places in America, probably any place in America, especially if it was on the side of a tank that was blasting into civilian households. I spoke to the lieutenant who drove the Bradley fighting vehicle. He's since been promoted to captain for his good work. He explained to me that their chaplain had brought for them a special screening of Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ that morning, and that had spiritually armored him and allowed him to fight, to drive this Jesus tank into battle without being endangered.
But shouldn't we just consider that an anomalous situation?
You know, when I began this story, Weinstein first contacted me because I write a lot about fundamentalism and said, you know, would you do something about this? And I said, well, these sound like bad apples. These sound like kooks. And he said, look, just research. So I did. I went to West Point. I went to Annapolis. I went to the Air Force Academy. I went to Fort Riley. I spoke to generals, majors, captains. And it was so widespread. almost nobody denied it. There was only two reactions. There was the reactions of fundamentalist soldiers who were happy to speak on the record about their views of Christianizing the military, and those who had the more traditional viewpoint, and they were afraid to put their names to it because it has become so predominantly fundamentalist that they can't even challenge it.
Well, newspaper reports have suggested that the Air Force Academy has moved in this direction, but you're saying all of the military academies have?
Yeah, there, I think Annapolis is an interesting case. They, the chaplains at the chapel started dipping the flag, the United States flag, before the cross. This is a violation of the military code. It's a violation of civilian flag code. The head of the Annapolis, an admiral, obviously, ordered them to stop, and the chaplain said no. And they defied an order, and this guy had no power. And so he just gave up. West Point was led by a man named General Bob Caslin, who had come under mild rebuke for his appearance in a video produced by a group called Christian Embassy, in which he testifies in uniform, on duty, at the Pentagon, which is a wild violation of military code, about his devotion to Jesus above all, including country. Well, for that, he was promoted to Commandant of West Point. I spoke to numerous cadets who reported being sort of bullied into Christianity by him, and then he was promoted yet again, and now he's one of 10 division commanders in the U.S. Army.
So what happens? A person is told you're not going to get a promotion if you don't come to the prayer meeting?
You know, it's never as blunt as that, and that's why I say in the story it's important for us to remember this is not a conspiracy, this is a culture. You know, we're dealing with folks, when they say, the Officers Christian Fellowship, they say, we're reclaiming territory for Christ in military. They see themselves as the norm. They say, look, the military is supposed to be Christian. So they think they're just acting out normal things. Lieutenant Colonel Bob Young, I spoke to in his capacity running a Kandahar air base in Afghanistan, presided over exorcisms, showed Afghan warlords PowerPoint presentations on America's God. And he told me that when a troop came and filed a formal complaint, a sergeant filed a formal complaint, was very brave to, you know, complaining about your commanding officer, said, look, you know, I think you're imposing Christianity on us. He said, well, I just sat that young man down and I asked him, I said, do you go to church? And the young man said, no, I don't. He said, don't you think your grandmother wants you to go to church? Are you betraying your grandmother? And he said, sure enough, next Sunday, that soldier was in church. So I just, you know, I realized what he really wanted me to do was bring him to the Lord. So he doesn't even know he's crossing the line. And that was very common because so many soldiers said, well, you know, the separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. It's made up by secularists. Technically, it's true it's not in the Constitution. It's the first line of the Bill of Rights.
Which is the Constitution.
It is the Constitution, yeah.
Has the Officers Christian Fellowship changed since 9/11?
It really had. You know, it had been this sort of, you know, amiable organization for people who want to get together and share their faith. After 9/11, you had the leaders of it, I think General Worcester, General Donald Worcester, if I'm remembering his name, declared the global war on terror a spiritual battle of the highest magnitude. And they started producing documents, Bible studies for fighting the war on terror. And, you know, there's even more reports than I can include in this story. One general in Iraq who made his subordinates look at a presentation he had put together, pointing out the similarities between the Book of Revelation and the war in Iraq to date. And that's some very dangerous thinking.
My guest is Jeff Charlotte, whose article, Jesus Killed Muhammad, The Crusade for a Christian Military, is the lead story in this month's issue of Harper's Magazine. You say that, and I'm quoting, if the fundamentalist front were to have a seminary, it would be the Air Force Academy. So the Air Force Academy is doing stuff that the other academies are not doing?
Air Force Academy is as is their tradition, above and beyond. They, you know, they're located in Colorado Springs, which is really the sort of the headquarters of the evangelical movement in America. And that in itself
is that just coincidental?
Yeah, it is coincidental. Although in recent years, you know, there's a megachurch called New Life, which is led by Ted Haggard, who listeners may remember. And, you know, he painted his church blue and gray because it was down the road from the Air Force Academy. And even now, I went to services.
But he was a victim of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
He was a victim of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. you know, more cadets are going to services at his church, about between 400 and 500 on a typical Friday night service, than are going to the Air Force Academy chapel. They had these problems. They said, okay, we're going to reform it. We're going to fix everything up. We're going to ensure diversity. the former leader of the Academy General, Rosa, said it'll take 6 years to restore constitutional principles to the Academy, and then he promptly resigned because he said this is too big. They brought in another general, General John Regney, to fix the problem, not a fundamentalist himself. I sat down with him and his top two sort of colonels, the chief chaplain and the chief PR guy. I said, tell me, you know, how you are approaching these First Amendment problems at the Academy. He said, what's that? And I said, well, you know, the Bill of Rights, First Amendment, freedom of religion. And he says, you're going to have to tell me what that is. And so I read it to him, and they had to write it down. He said, I have to write those constitutional things down. Then he talked with his two colonels, and they finally gave up. They said, you know, we're just not familiar with that. First Amendment of the Bill of Rights. And it's one of these things that some listeners are saying, well, I couldn't recite the First Amendment either. But they're not swearing an oath to defend
this with their life. They probably know the Second Amendment.
They do know the Second Amendment. And they have the most powerful guns in the world.
So, tell us about one of the people you write about, John Butcher.
Yeah. John Butcher was a firstie at the Academy, which is to say a senior. And when I spoke to him, his plan was actually to switch to the Army because he had realized that as a pilot, he would have a lot less access to soldiers that he could proselytize. He believed in spiritual war. He was very clear that the war in Iraq was a spiritual war, that there's a comparison. And one of the really interesting things that struck me is that I think a lot of people assume that these people are doing this because they're afraid to die. And that's not fair. I mean, you know, the young men and women at the Academy are the best and the brightest. They're very brave people. They're not so much afraid to die as they're afraid to kill. They don't know what they're fighting for. And democracy isn't enough for John Butcher, so he said, well, I need to know that I'm doing God's work. When I shoot a missile somewhere, I need to know that God wants me to shoot that missile. He was leading what was described as an underground prayer network of men at the Academy.
Why does he say that a Christian is someone who chooses to be a slave, essentially?
That's a really interesting. I mean, that's an old Christian idea that, you know, you are a bond servant. The idea that you give up your greed and your pride and your sense of self, and you just turn yourself over to God. As a personal religious conviction, that's fine. When you have an officer who is in charge, who has his finger on a trigger, very literally, saying, you know what, I'm not going to exercise my critical faculties. You know, I'm not going to be an officer in a sense. I am just going to say God has ordered me into this war with Islam, and I don't ask questions. I just fire.
You attended a prayer meeting at the Air Force Academy?
Yeah. This was a sort of a strange thing. I was there for a little less than a week, and some cadets, Butch was one of them, invited me to what they call this underground prayer network. And some solace to people who are worried about this movement is they're not always as bright as you would want them to be. To invite a reporter to your underground prayer group is not necessarily the brightest thing. And what they're doing there is not, they're not sitting there thinking, you know, how can we overthrow the military? They're not conspiring like that. They're talking in some ways about very, very simple things. They'll talk about struggling with lust because they're all committed to chastity. But then they'll segue into other issues. For instance, through this group, they were sending very literally undercover missionaries to China. Cadets get 3 weeks off a year. They were lying on their visas. Calling themselves English tutors and going to China and doing missionary work. Again, if you're a civilian, that's your issue. It is illegal to lie on a visa. But if you're a representative of the U.S. government and you're lying on a visa and going to China as an officer of our military and doing missionary work, suddenly you're betraying the trust that we've put in you making you an officer.
Should I assume that most of these people didn't vote for Barack Obama? The reason I ask is because you write that Rick Warren's The Purpose-Driven Life is quite popular, and he did participate in the Barack Obama inauguration ceremonies.
That was one of the puzzling things about the Barack Obama inauguration ceremonies. I mean, Rick Warren, remember, is fond of saying, I don't differ theologically from James Dobson on a single point. He's proudly a fundamentalist. His style is more friendly. But in fact, one thing, the purpose-driven airman was shown to at least 1,000 airmen at a base, an American base in England. And it said, we're going to follow Rick Warren's principles. And we say, you have two choices who you can serve, America and God, or, I mean, it's sort of out of date, the Soviet Union and Darwin. It says Darwin and Stalin and Lenin were the trinity that led the Soviet. I mean, it was crazy, crazy stuff. But they're sort of drawing from the purpose-driven life. And what was most...
They don't know the Soviet Union is no more?
You know, it's Soviet Union, global war on terrorism, radicalism, six of one, half dozen of the other. The big enemy is really what was for them. And they were just sort of repurposing, so to speak, this old document. And what they were describing this as was a suicide prevention program. They said, if you don't have God, you're going to commit suicide. If you believe in Darwin, you're going to commit suicide. And, of course, now we have this suicide epidemic in the military, and you have these officers who are not taking care of their troops and giving them bad information.
A listener wants to know how aware Congress is of this sort of thing.
Well, you know, I spoke to one senator, a Vietnam veteran, who asked to be anonymous. He says because he deals with the military so often that he just didn't want to be on record. But he had a really interesting analysis. He was very aware of it. And he said, you know, part of the reason he thinks that it followed Vietnam was there did used to be a fair amount of racism, and there still is, in the military, like everywhere. But there was a real racism. But after there was a period there where a lot of these men, in particular, part of this white Southern warrior culture, really tried to change that. And they no longer had that solidarity, that skin solidarity, of race solidarity. And so they moved toward this religious solidarity. And so he says, look, that's the problem. These guys need to feel that they are separate from a weak and corrupt civilian culture, and they're using religion to do that. So you had, you know, you had that senator. There's others, congressmen who were involved, but no one's making a priority. Unfortunately, under Obama, some of these guys have even been promoted.
Jeff Charlotte is a contributing editor of Harper's Magazine, the author of The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, which is being released now in paperback form by Harper's. There's also a book coming out in July called Believer Beware, First Person Dispatches from the Margins of Faith, which he has edited, and that's from Beacon Press. The article in the current issue of Harper's Magazine is called Jesus Killed Muhammad, the Crusade for a Christian Military. And by the way, we have a link to it on our show page at WNYC.org. Jeff, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thanks very much, Leonard.
Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out the other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This is a free service made available by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.